Ever hear what happened to the hippopotamus who swallowed a Jewish rabbi, a no. Protestant minister, and a Catholic priest?
No.
Why, he had an ecumenical movement. That's what happened. Let's continue from where we left off this morning. I'm sure lots of you will have questions. I propose we leave them for a little later, because once I've spoken about two or three other topics, maybe some of the things you were planning to ask me about will get clarified. So, I suggest that before I take up the next topic, you do the following. Would you write down on a piece of paper any adjectives that you would use to describe yourself? Any adjectives. Businessman, priest, human being, Catholic, Jew, anything. Well, or any labels like businessman, etc.
How about terrific?
Anything. Adjectives or nouns that you would use to describe yourself. You're in for a big surprise. You really are. So write those down. You're really going to enjoy this. Now let's have a few samples. One from each person. Just a few samples, you know. Anyone? What was that? She planned this one. Okay. Any others?
Fruitful.
Searching pilgrim. Searching pilgrim. Competent.
Alive.
Alive.
Impatient.
Centered.
Flexible.
Flexible.
Lover.
What was that?
Reconciler.
Lover.
Member of the human race.
Overly structured.
Overly structured. All right. That's a pretty good introduction for what we're going to get into right now. Remember, I said to you this morning that you would derive immense profit from self-observation, observing yourself, remember? As if you were watching another person. Observing everything in you and around you. Now let's take a look at that phenomenon. We're going to get right into whatever you want to call it. Philosophy, mysticism, spirituality, you name it. The name doesn't matter. Here you've got I observing me. Now this is an interesting phenomenon which has never ceased to cause wonder to philosophers, mystics, scientists, psychologists. I can observe me. It would seem that the animals are not able to do this. It would seem that one needs a certain amount of intelligence to be able to do this. Self-consciousness. Now I'm warning you, what I'm going to give you now is not metaphysics. It is not philosophy. It's plain observation. Plain common sense. Maybe we'll come back to the philosophy of it later on. But watch this. When I observes me, I looking at me. Remember I told you this morning, many of these great mystics of the East would say, who are you? Who am I? Who is I? They're really referring to that I. not to the me. And let's suppose that I were to observe me observing me. Have you noticed this has become me now? Who's this guy? Search for the I. That's what they're saying. Who's I? And no matter how far back you go, you're always going to have to search for I. What is I? Who is I? Ever thought of that? We've been given all kinds of answers, or we've taken all kinds of answers for granted, but never stopped, probably, to analyze or to find out for ourselves who I is or what I is. As a matter of fact, some of these mystics will tell you that we first begin with things, with awareness of things. Then we move on to awareness of thoughts. Me. And finally, to awareness of the thinker. Things, thoughts, thinker. What we're really searching for is the thinker. Can the thinker know himself? Can I know what I is? Some of these mystics reply, can the knife cut itself? Can the tooth bite itself? Can the eye, E-Y-E, see itself? Can the eye know itself? But this we will have to leave for later. I am concerned with something infinitely more practical right now, and that is with deciding what the I is not. And I'll go as slowly as possible because it's important that you follow every step here, because the consequences are devastating. Terrific or terrifying, depending on your point of view. You've got the seed of liberation here. Now listen to this. Am I my thoughts? Is I the thoughts that I am thinking? No. Thoughts come and go. I am not my thoughts. Is that clear? Yes. How about my body? Am I my body? They tell us that the cells of our body keep getting changed and renewed, millions of them every minute, so that at the end of about 7 years, you don't have a single living cell in your body which was there 7 years previously. They're always changing. Cells come and go. Cells arise and die. I seems to persist. So am I my body? Evidently no. I is something other and more than the body. You might say the body is part of I, but it's a changing part. It keeps moving. It keeps changing. We have the same name for it, but it's constantly changing. Just as we have the same name for Niagara Falls. But Niagara Falls is constituted by the water, which is constantly changing. Same name for an ever-changing reality. I seems to continue, even though the body cells are changing, How about my name? Is I my name? Evidently not, because I could change my name. I don't change the I when I change my name. How about my career? How about my beliefs? I am a Catholic. I am a Jew. Is that an essential part of I? When I move from one religion to another, has I changed? And let's suppose I get back to my original religion. Has I changed? Do I have a new I? Or is it the same I that has changed? In other words, is my name an essential part of me, of the I? Is my religion an essential part of the I? Remember I told you this morning about the little boy who says to the little girl, "Are you a Presbyterian?" Remember? Somebody told me one about someone in Belfast. Paddy was walking down the streets and he finds there's a gun there at the back of his head, pressing against the back of his head, and a voice says, "Are you Catholic or Protestant?" Well, Paddy had to do some pretty fast thinking. He said, "I'm a Jew." And he hears the voice say, "I've got to be the luckiest Arab in the whole of Belfast." Isn't it interesting how important labels are for us? They're so important. I am a Democrat. I am a Republican. Are you really now? You mean when you switch parties? Do you have a new I? Or is it the same old I with new political convictions? Remember hearing about the guy who says to his friend, he says, "Hey, Tom, are you planning to vote Democrat in the next elections?" He says, "No, I'm planning," or rather, "Are you planning to vote Republican?" The guy says, "No, I'm planning to vote Democrat." "Why?" "Because my father was a Democrat, my grandfather was a Democrat, my great-grandfather was a Democrat, so I'm voting Democrat." And the other guy says, "That's crazy logic, Paddy. I mean, now let's put it this way. If your father was a horse thief, and your grandfather was a horse thief, and your great-grandfather was a horse thief, what would you be?" He said, "Well, then I'd be a Republican." So labels. Labels, labels, labels. So where does that get you? And we spend so much of our lives, don't we, reacting to labels, our own and others, identifying the label with the I. Talking about Catholics and Protestants, did you hear the one about the guy who comes in and says, "Father, I want you to say a mass for my dog." Father's indignant, he's outraged. "What do you mean say a mass for your dog?" He says, "You know my dog, my pet dog, I love that dog. I'd like you to offer a mass for him." Father says, "We don't offer masses for dogs, for animals here. You may try the denomination lower down the street. Ask them, they might have a service for you." And the guy, as he's moving away, he says, "Too bad, I really love that dog. I was planning to offer $1 million in stipend for that mass." Father says, "Well, wait a minute. You never told me your dog was Catholic." When you're caught up in labels, what value do these labels have when applied to I? That's an interesting question. I'll invite you to think about it later, to discuss it. Could we say that I is none of the labels that we attach to it. That these labels belong to me. That what is constantly changing is me. Does the observer ever change? Why bother? The fact is that no matter what labels you can think of, except perhaps human being, you apply them to me. I is none of these things. So when you step out of yourself and observe me, when you step out of yourself and no longer observe, and sorry, and no longer identify with me, you learn all kinds of interesting things. For instance, suffering. Suffering exists in me and when you identify with me. Anytime you identify, anytime I identifies with anything or person outside of itself, or it identifies with me, suffering begins. Now comes fear. Now comes desire. Now comes a threat. The I begins to feel threatened. When I does not identify with money, or name, or nationality, or persons, or friends, or any quality, the I is not threatened. Can be very active, as I will show you later on, but it isn't threatened. Everybody think of a time, or think of some suffering that you have right now. Anything that's causing you pain or worry or anxiety. Think of that. First, can you pick up the desire under that suffering? There's something you desire very keenly, or you wouldn't be suffering. What is it? Second, that isn't just an ordinary desire, that's a craving. Worse, there's an identification there. You have somehow said to yourself, the well-being of I, almost the existence of I, is tied up with this desire. How true is it that all suffering is caused by my identifying myself with something, whether that something is within me or outside of me? And when it is outside of me, whether it is a thing or a person.